click, click, click everywhere I go. Get it, can't get me, face card froze. Never gonna see me waiting at the door, no. Get out of the way.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is unfortunately not here. He is out on leave today, but he shall be back soon enough. But regardless, Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We take in a film year, Moses for your review, the occasional commentary track, or some other film movie topic. This episode 665, and it's almost appropriate as today we're talking about The Devil Wears Prada 2. If only we planned this in advance, we could have really landed on an ironic number, but here we are, episode 665, to talk about The Devil Wears Prada. But regardless, joining me to discuss The Devil Wears Prada 2, we have both the M and Burr of Ember Productions. Gird your loins, it's Amber Coates and Tony Award winner Maxwell Hadid.
Oh, hi.
Hello. Hello, hello.
How are you, Aaron?
I'm good. How are the two of you doing?
Doing
all right.
Glad to have you both back on this podcast. Enjoying.
Thank you for having us.
Enjoying your presence as always, and good to have you here. I'm looking forward to having this conversation. I know you had certain levels of anticipation for these movies, so it's for this movie, so we'll see how that goes. But first up, let's get to some show notes. A number of things. Let's see. Commentary tracks. We've been doing commentaries every month on this podcast. As we do commentaries every month. And for the past several months, we've had our Teenage Wasteland theme of commentaries, various iconic high school / teenage movies from different decades. So we started with American Graffiti, then we went to The Breakfast Club, then we went to Clueless, and this month, or last month, because it's now May, we did Mean Girls. And now we have, for May, to conclude our Teenage Wasteland series, we're doing Dope. That is the plan, the 2015 film Dope, which I'll be excited to talk about. All right, what else? iTunes reviews, ratings, and scores, good to get those. Helps out the show, helps other people find the show. If you want to log on to iTunes, search for it out there today. You can do just that. You can find our show, you can give us a rating or review, or anywhere you can find your podcast and review us. That'd be great. Pop us up with all the iTunes charts. And also, of course, we are now in the throes of the summer movie gamble. Maxwell, you are a part of the summer movie gamble, of course.
I've been doing it for many years, and I take it very seriously. I won once, if I'm not mistaken, and I would very much like to retain my title this summer.
I mean, everyone hopes to, be a winner someday. But yeah, some of us are lucky enough to have won once, if not a couple times in the past. And yeah, as we have arranged it, The Devil Wears Prada 2 is the official kickoff movie for the summer, beginning of May, as usually is. And Devil Wears Prada did not disappoint. It opened with $77 million domestically. It's already at like 200 something worldwide, which is pretty impressive. But 77, not a bad way to start things out, especially for most of us who have it somewhere in the kind of 7 through 5 range, it looks like. So that's a pretty good way to get things out. Where do you have it? I'm looking for yours. You have it at number 6, it looks like. Yeah. So good. All right. We'll see. We'll obviously check in as we go with the box office as we go through the summer. But now let's move on. Let's get to some Out Now quickies. TME, we know we got movie that talked about during the week. I don't know. He's weird that we're doing that for over a decade. Amber, let's start with you. What other films have you seen recently?
Oh my gosh, what other films have I seen recently, Maxwell? You are the keeper of the tickets.
We just finished watching one like 20 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, we did watch Apex like 20 minutes ago.
Ah, okay,
and that was incredibly interesting and anxiety inducing because there's a lot of climbing and there's free climbing without harnesses, and I'm a very anxious person when it comes to heights and climbing and things like that, unless it's in a climbing gym where I'm safe and I can see the person below me. You like I said, well, usually ends up taking me to see all of the movies, so I'm like, we watch a movie almost every night. I think we've watched a lot of Hunger Games lately because we're preparing for that one to come out later this year. And then we saw Mother Mary recently, which was absolutely stunningly phenomenal. And like we've seen Michael and the drama and You, Me, and Destiny. So things such as that.
Anything stand out in particular?
I would say definitely I love the drama. I loved Mother Mary. I thought Yumi and Tuscany was absolutely adorable. I also really enjoyed the Super Mario Galaxy movie. I thought that was a really fun one. I'm also obsessed with R Rosalina and every Mario game out there, so I definitely like live for that.
Fair enough. All right, Maxwell. Obviously, similar recap, apparently, but any different?
The only one I've seen recently that Amber has not is Hokum, which I enjoyed very, very much. I do not get scared often in movies, and while I will not say I was scared, it certainly kept me on my toes. I thought its building of atmosphere and dread, its use of shadows and light was really, really effective. And also, Mother Mary knocked my socks off. I absolutely loved it. I recognize it is not for everyone. It is very odd, but it took me on a very, very emotional journey.
I mean, I don't disagree as far as it's not necessarily for everyone, but I do think it gets like the right kind of grounded footing going by having being a two-hander that kind of progresses into more and more of its weird. Like, I think if you're willing to go along with what it's doing, it does set you up well enough so it doesn't feel like it's just out of
Yes.
nowhere suddenly becoming
Oh,
abstract.
totally. I agree with you that every element is properly set up, and if you like are willing to go on the journey, it's all there for the taking.
It was like high watching poetry. Like that's how I felt when I was watching it. It was like watching poetry happen in front of my face. I was like, oh, this is really fantastic. Like, oh yeah.
I enjoyed the film too, and I liked it for its performances mainly. I wish there was more music, honestly. I thought there was gonna be more music in the film, given that she
If she
plays a pop
were
star.
a real life pop star, I would be a huge fan. Because what music we did hear, her costumes, her aesthetics, it was all right in my
That's
wheelhouse.
what I'm saying. I'm like, there can be
Yeah.
more of this.
Well,
Like,
maybe we'll get a pop star style Mother Mary prequel.
it's not, I think there are different kinds of movies, but it's not hard to think of Vox Lux as far as A24's dark
Yes.
pop princess
For sure.
series of movies. She has like a whole concert she makes in that movie. So I'm like, well, give me more music. David Lowery, come on, what are you skipping out on me for? But obviously, I got the soundtrack like right away as soon as I could.
Yes.
So.
And the other thing I'll say is I think it's going to make a great double feature with David Lowery's A Ghost Story
Yeah, for sure,
in
I
the
can
near
see that.
future when you can watch them both back to back.
Have you seen the Christophers yet, by the way?
Not yet. It's high up on my list, but it's barely playing anywhere near us, so.
Hopefully, it spreads out a little bit more
You
before it
would think
goes
that
to.
we would have a lot more access to that considering we live an hour out of New York or whatever.
No, I know, but I haven't been in New York that much, and the art house theater in our town is closed for a year for renovation.
Gross. Well,
Well, it'll be
oh.
nicer when it's done, but in the meantime, it's like,
Sure.
ugh.
I bring it up just because it's been a nice, like, it's nice to see Michaela Cole getting, like, just really good movies to work with good talent and everything.
She is incredibly talented.
For sure. I liked Hokum too, by the way. I was a little lesser on it than Oddity, which I really liked. Did you see Oddity as previous film? Yeah, I figured you did. And that movie really worked for me a lot. This one, not for any particular reason beyond I just liked one more than the other, but I like Adam Scott being very Adam Scott in this movie for sure. Like it, you know, I'm all for him evolving as an actor and being so
It
great
was
in Severance, but
almost like he's playing his stepbrother's character, but not for comedic effect.
yeah. That's the kind of Adam Scott like. Almost just it's like the beginning of his Party Down character, where he's his most cynical before he lightens up a bit. It's like before that. That's
He
that
has,
Adam
and he
Scott.
has no fun in Hokum.
I've seen a couple things, and I'm going to mention something else that I did that I'm somewhat press obligated to, but I'm excited to talk about it. But first up, I watched Power Ballad. This is the new John Carney film
Ooh.
coming up in June, and because it's already premiered at South by, I think I'm allowed to talk about it. So I'll just say I liked it quite a bit. Maybe not as much as like Once or Sing Street, but John Carney gives you movies that tend to work quite well. This one has Paul Rudd as the lead singer of a wedding band, and he meets up with a very popular musician played by Nick Jonas, who's trying to figure out his own. He was in a boy band, hey, coincidence, and now he's trying to strike it out on his own. And Paul Rudd kind of inadvertently gives him one of his songs, and Nick Jonas takes that song and makes it into a huge hit. And now it's a matter of hey, maybe Paul Rudd should get credit for it. But we'll see what it kind of goes from there. It's fun in the way that John Carney makes movies fun, as far as you get original music, you get fun performances, you get a good amount of drama, and the emotion that goes with it. I think it's very fitting for a John Carney, for a more mainstream John Carney film especially. So I recommend. It's a good time. I watched Apex as well. I enjoyed Apex. Give me more crazy Taron Egerton. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Give me anything. I like him a lot. Taron Egerton has not disappointed me in a movie. Like, give me
It's safe to say in Apex he is chewing the scenery.
That's for sure.
That
And
comment was definitely made during the watcher.
he really sunk his teeth into the role.
Viciously.
As the kids say, Taron Egerton ate. He left no crumbs. I'm done. I'm sorry.
All right, we're
Drowning.
back. Maxwell did 5 minutes more of those, and then we had to cut them all out for the edit. But here we are. I also watched Deep Water in terms of B movie schlock that's in theaters now. This is Rennie Harlan's latest film. It has Aaron Eckhart, who, yes, is still in movies, and Ben Kingsley. It's about a plane that crashes in the middle of the ocean. Sorry, has a water landing in the middle of the ocean. And what do you know it? A bunch of sharks attack the survivors that are still there. So it's a matter of how do these people that are on rafts, barely holding their heads above water, survive the shark gang that has descended upon them. This movie is okay. I kind of wanted more from it because I'm all for a good shark movie. I really think Rennie Harlan kind of like wore himself out making those terrible Strangers movies. And so I'm like, I think he needs to recharge a bit before he gets back into the game here. Like, I'm all for Rennie Harlan schlock, but I'm like, yeah, you're one of the few people that made like a great shark movie of Deep Blue Sea. I was kind of hoping for more, but didn't do a whole lot for me. Maybe if I didn't see it with the audience, I saw it on a screener, and I'm like, I'd be pretty discerning when it comes to this kind of thing, so it doesn't really bother me necessarily. But if I saw it with an audience, I might have liked it a little bit more. But at the same time, I still just kind of wasn't feeling it as much as I would have liked. So, but. Yeah, Deepwater, which is a title that's very common, by
There's like
the
eight
way.
movies named
Yeah.
Deepwater.
Just like I saw,
Yeah,
what
like
is it?
it brings us back to like the natural disaster movies, like Deep Impact and The
This one just has more
Miserable.
sharks. So.
Except Love it.
But now I'm going to talk about something else, which actually kind of fitting, because Maxwell, you tend to go to theme parks quite a bit.
We both do, yeah.
I got to go to Universal Studios Fan Fest Nights for this year.
Oh, I'm jealous. It looks awesome.
Yeah. That looks so good.
So I got to go as press, which is why I need to talk about it somewhere. So, but I'm happy to. But so this the idea here is, as opposed to maybe actually you could help me clarify this as well, but like as opposed to Universal Horror Nights, where obviously there are different horror mazes on the theme park's premises that are themed around different IP in general or what have you, instead of being horror themed, this is just like different brands that have like special areas of the park devoted to them where you can do different kinds of things. Is that an accurate way to like say it? Like different
Yeah,
IP.
I mean, from what I could tell, it's like various immersive experiences based on different intellectual properties. The production value looks great. And I like, that they're keeping it out west and not doing it in Orlando because Orlando's busy enough as it
Oh,
is.
so I wasn't sure. I
Yeah.
wasn't sure if they actually had if there was in both places. So it's not. So it's only
No,
in. Okay.
FanFest has only been in Hollywood.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I believe this is the second one. I think last year
Yeah,
was
I
the
think last
first.
year was the first year. Yeah.
Yeah. So this year, I think last year, I like Back to the Future was one of the big ones that they had, among others.
I think Dungeons and Dragons last year also.
So Dungeons and Dragons returned, although I didn't go
Oh,
to it
cool.
because I just didn't have time. But the among the ones they had Scooby-Doo, Sailor Moon, a Harry Potter themed Search for the Hippogriff, which I found. One Piece, and Super Nintendo. Like they had a thing within the Mario thing, and then
Oh,
Jurassic
cool.
Park. So I'm gonna go through some of these as far as what they do because they're pretty clever. The most clever one was Scooby-Doo by far. Scooby-Doo, you get to go. You basically it's the you take the tram because there's the famous the tram tour for Universal, but instead of doing the tram tour experience, instead it takes you down to Little Europe where they film a lot of movies, and you get off the tram and they have a whole thing devoted to solving a Scooby-Doo mystery. And so you get like a you get a notebook with all these different clues and different suspects, and you go to different parts of Little Europe to eliminate the suspects that are is part of this greater mystery that you watch the video for ahead of time. And as you narrow it down, you eventually go to like your own little special area where they put on like a new show that shows you like the end of the mystery, assuming that you got the answer right to begin with. It's very clever, and it's the kind of thing where it has to be like just hard enough to like make you want to solve it, but still like friendly enough for all ages people to actually be able to solve it. So it can't be, it can be kids and adults that are also that are struggling for the same reasons. It's pretty clever how they have it set up if you want to like actually engage with the mystery and whatnot. And obviously you can take pictures of all the different cast, all the, you know, Daphne and Velma and Shaggy and Scoot, all that. You can do that. And for good measure, because they're making like a mon the idea is that they're making a monster movie and then somebody is on the scene like trying to disrupt the movie. So they have like a Bride of Frankenstein and a Wolfman and people walking around and everything too, as you do. Quite enjoyed this. This is a lot of fun. I went with friend of the show, Peter Paris, by the way. We were both together watching, doing this whole stuff. So it was just a sad man walking by himself doing Scooby-Doo. So like that was fun. Let's see, One Piece, which I don't watch. I'm not familiar with, beyond like just culture osmosis. I don't know One Piece, but it's basically they just replaced it with the Waterworld stunt show. It's currently the One Piece stunt show,
Oh, cool.
which is effective. Like it's still the same basic thing as far as, you know, jet skis and boats on the water, and they're doing flips and jumping off high things with the stunt people and doing fights and whatnot. It's cool. It's good. It's well done. I, given that I've seen the Waterworld show many, many, many times, it's always fun to see a new skin on top of it with that arena to do something different. So it was fun. As I said, I found the hippogriff.
Was was he next to all the transphobia, or was he elsewhere?
No, but afterwards I went to the little boys' room and it said little boys and only boys. And I'm like, oh, that's a weird stipulation, but okay.
Jesus.
It'd be terrible if
So bad.
that was true. But no. Yeah, it was actually inadvertent because I thought Peter and I were we just went to the Wizarding World section thinking we were gonna go on like the ride, like the big ride that they have, and we didn't realize that, oh, this isn't the line for that. This is this other thing completely that's about searching for a hippogriff. Because I'm like, why is this line so interactive? And I'm like, oh, it's one of these. That's why.
Yeah.
In Super Nintendo World, they had like a scavenger hunt. So you just walk all around the Nintendo land and try to find whatever the clues are. And then it'll add up to like a word scramble. And you unscramble the words and it's a password. You say the password, then you go to get to take pictures with Mario and Yoshi. You know, it's fun. You know, it's if you're into that. And I missed this. I did go to the Sailor Moon thing because we ran out of time. But the other main thing we did was Jurassic Park, which was. And along with just the ride, they have a whole section devoted to like making it a small portion of Jurassic Park, and they have actors dressed as John Hammond, Dr. Ian Malcolm, BD Wong's character, I can't remember his name, and of course Dennis Nedry, you know, the main people you want to see at Jurassic Park: Dennis Nedry, John Hammond, and Dr. Ian
I
Malcolm.
always want to see Dennis Nedry.
The Dennis
Really?
Nedry, who's I think quite popular because I keep seeing him on Instagram a lot. Like he does a really good job. Like he's not just doing a good Wayne Knight performance. He's like he has like a handkerchief and he's constantly like wiping his brow. Like he's doing all this like business. It's like really good. It's like a really good impression of it. Like it's one thing to like just look like Dr. Ian Malcolm. It's another thing to like have like the kind of the you know the cadence down and everything he's doing. So it's pretty fun.
Love that.
And you can have conversation. They're just in characters. You can have Jurassic Park themed conversations with them. I was leaving the park. I was leaving the place, and I told John, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to endorse your park. And I told him to go back to the flea circus. And he was like, oh, well, no. But it was fun. And they have like a whole raptor encounter. Like these raptors in costume will come out and they have all these non Chris Pratt's holding up their hands to try to get them to go the other way and everything. Like it's all a bunch of fun.
Man.
I took a video of that. Anyone that follows me on Instagram, you can see my raptor encounter that I had. So like, yeah, it's if you like Universal and if you like engaging with this kind of thing, I think it's a lot of fun. It does the job for what it's trying to. I had heard things about last year's being like effective enough, although like somewhat small scale. For my money, it seems like. By my money, I mean for the free press pass that I had, it seemed like I don't know if they have more things than they had last year, but it certainly seemed like it was. I mean, the park was it was reasonably full for a Friday night, a random Friday night in April, and everyone seemed to be having a great time, and there was like enough to do to kind of keep everyone busy for the time there. So if you were interested at all, it's happening, I think, for like the next 5 weeks on the weekends, on Friday through Sunday. So there you go, Universal Fan Fest Nights. It's enough shilling. That gets me out of writing an article, so it's done. That's enough cookies. Thank
TM.
you. Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. This week we're talking One Night Only. One Night Only. This is a new upcoming romantic comedy starring Monica Barbaro and Callum Turner, among many others, actually. I've noticed this cast. There's a few people on here. It's from director Will Gluck, who brought us things such as Easy A and Friends with Benefits and not one but two Peter Rabbit movies. So, with all that said, Amber, let's start with you. What do you think of the trailer for One Night? Sorry, let me. I forgot the premise. This premise. Okay, we there are. I'm gonna read exactly what it says here. Two strangers try to find love on the one night a year when premarital sex is legal. So we're in some kind of alternate reality that may shockingly come true some one day, based on how things are going, where sex is elite, where premarital sex is illegal like every day except one day of a year. So the purge, but done with sex now. All that in mind, Amber, now back to you. What did you think of the trailer for One Night Only?
So I thought the trailer was really cute. I just didn't understand the premise when we started watching it. I was like, wait, what's happening? Because like they mentioned that it was the one night that sex was legal, and I was like, wait, why? I don't understand. And I was like, but that doesn't make sense to me. And my poor TISM brain was just like, no, this is breaking me. Why? But then we watched the rest of it, and I thought it was cute. And I was like, yeah, this I could watch this. This looks adorable.
Back, so how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I have a million questions about how this works.
Yes.
Like, are there cameras everywhere where they can see, like, see you fucking in a closet? Like, come on. But that being said, to me, what the trailer sold was the chemistry between Monica Barbaro and Callum Turner. I could
100%.
feel it in the trailer. It was palpable, and that's like 60 to 70% of making a good romantic comedy is your leads having that spark. And if they have the spark in the trailer, I am thinking this could be pretty decent. And as you said, the supporting cast is stacked, like Maya Hawke, Molly
Yeah.
Ringwald, Esti Haim, LeVar Burton. Come on, like there's a lot of cool people in this cast,
A
so we'll
lot of
see.
sexy people in this cast. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Julia
Or
Fox.
Julia Fox. I see Nicholas Braun's on the list here as well. Yeah. All right.
Right. Cousin Greg.
Cousin Greg himself. I am in the exact same boat as far as I feel like I'm trying to think way too much hard about this premise when the film's probably not going to give us too many details
Yep.
beyond like the very basics of it. And so I'm going to be sitting there being like, do they have like shot collars on their dicks? Like, what's going on? Like, I don't just I just can't quite. And then it gets into like we're like weird murky territory. Like, I just don't know. But yes, if you're going to give me a Will Gluck rom-com starring Monica Barbaro and Callum Turner, I'm like, I'm not intrigued by that. Where are we with Callum Turner? What's he do again? He's in like those Fantastic Beasts movies and
Honestly, the only thing I really know about him is that he's dating Dua Lipa, so he's a very
oh,
lucky man.
and he's coming off of Vanessa Kirby to Dua Lipa, so I'm like, well, they're
Right. So, like,
doing something right.
lucky.
doing something right. I keep hearing his name bandied about as like a potential Bond option. He would certainly have the largest ears of any James Bond. I haven't seen enough of him to like decide if I like him or not yet. I don't dislike him.
He was in the it's funny. He was in the Masters of Air, which was like the, you know, there's Band of Brothers and there's a Pacific. He was in the
Yes,
Mass
with
those two.
Austin Butler.
Boston Butler, yeah, which I enjoyed. I can't say I necessarily said that I enjoyed it because specifically Callum Turner, but I enjoyed that just as well because they're all those same like the same people involved as all those Spielberg World War II series. And he was in Eternity last year with Miles Teller and Elizabeth Olsen, which I My problem with Eternity mainly was I don't think Callum Turner should be the other part, like the other half of this throuple that we have to deal with, or this love triangle. It was not a throuple; they weren't together. But No, it's not offense to him as his acting. It's just more like, huh, we already have Miles Teller. Do we need like another white guy? Like, do something different. But anyway, this movie, on the other hand, I like Monica Barbaro. I agree with you. I think the chemistry is at least based on this trailer is somewhat there. So I want to see this work. I think Will Gluck has more good movies than bad movies, though. I thought anyone but you was a
Terrible? Yeah, me too. Me t
dumpster fire. It's like, how do you zap charisma from that cast away from every single person?
Every character in that movie was like the dumbest character I've ever seen in a movie.
As Scott Mendelson, friend of the show, likes to say, even Dermot Mulroney was bad, and Dermot Mulroney is never bad in movies.
That's
That's
true.
but ideally, there's a recovery here. And we see something interesting. A high concept rom-com that is high concept like this is certainly that's not nothing. So we shall see. One Night Only opens the theaters August 7th this summer. So we'll see how it goes. All right. That moves us to the main review for The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Hello.
Well, look what TJ Maxx dragged in.
Sorry. Who is this? Do you know her? Do I know her?
I'm Andy Sachs. Andrea.
She was one of the Emilys.
One of the what?
Am I having a hallucination?
Hi, Emily.
You also know her?
We were at Runway at the same time, Miranda.
Really? Where was I?
All right, that's just been some of the trailer for The Devil Wears Prada 2. Back in 2006, amid summer releases such as Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, The Da Vinci Code, Superman Returns, and X-Men: The Last Stand, Devil Wears Prada was quite a hit. It was also well received enough to earn Meryl Streep an Oscar nomination, along with one for Best Costume Design, which is never easy for a contemporary film. 20 years later, knowing that Streep in particular is very much returning to old roles, we actually have a sequel that takes a look at where these characters are now. As it stands, Anne Hathaway's Andy Sachs has just been abruptly fired, and Miranda Priestly, her boss, has decided to hire Andy as a new features editor as a means to redirect Runway Magazine back towards more credible stories. Both Andy and Miranda clash at first, with Stanley Tucci's Nigel still being a catty moral center, but eventually things take a turn focused more on how to keep Runway alive amid various attempts by big business to run it into the ground thanks to new media. Yeah, okay. Amber, I'd like to know, where were you with the first Devil Wears Prada, and what'd you think of this sequel?
I really enjoyed the first Devil Wears Prada. I think it's an iconic movie. And I saw it when it first came out, then didn't see it again for quite some time, but absolutely loved it. It's fun. It's super there are so many lines that are quoted, specifically the one where she says that she starves herself and eats a block of like a piece of cheese. Like, I don't know why, but that is like, it's entered our cultural lexicon, which is absolutely hilarious to me. That being said, I went into the movie because I don't know how I've ever felt about a sequel coming maybe 20 years after or 10 years after, like a long time after the first one. I really want it to be within, a couple of years to make sense and still have the right cast. But this seemed to have worked out. I enjoyed it. I felt like it was a nostalgia bomb. I felt like the characters had grown appropriately, and even though a lot of the beats were still the exact same, because it's basically rehashing the first movie again. But then it kind of delves into different places by the end of it, and I felt that what it did, it was almost like reinventing the shoe or the heel, I guess, if you really want to go there. Because like they just took something that we knew that was comfortable, that was, something that we all know we enjoyed, or if we did, and then reinvented it and gave it a better ending. And kind of it really took some of the characters that were not very sympathetic in the first one and gave them sympathetic beats where I actually enjoyed them a lot more and kind of ended the movie with a little bit more resolution for their character.
All right. Maxwell, to you, the same question. Are you a fan of the original Devil Wears Prada? Do you like the sequel?
Yeah, I mean, the original is one of those movies I would label a comfort movie. I feel like it's endlessly rewatchable, whether you put it on from the beginning or you catch the last third on myriad cable channels that seem to be playing it 4 or 5 times a week. I enjoy it very much. I did not enjoy The Devil Wears Prada 2 all that much.
Okay.
I will say I liked that it talked about the issues facing traditional print journalism. That is a crisis that's going on. And I think when you think about the fact that, in one way or another, Disney owns this movie, to be making that bold statement against the shifts in media, good for them. And it was very nice to see the cast return. I thought everyone, for the most part, did a really nice job in their roles. The movie itself just felt sort of ramshackle and slapdash to me. Like a lot of contrivances and conveniences. I felt that the characters' motivations and behavior changed based on whatever a particular scene needed. There was way too many cameos that just got obnoxious and annoying. It all sort of just fell flat for me. I didn't think it had like the filmmaking energy of the first one. The lighting was off and it dragged a lot in the middle for me. So I'm kind of disappointed. But there are things I did enjoy.
Okay, so interesting. I think we're all coming at this at different angles, which rarely happens when you have multiple guests. Because in regards to the first film, I think it's a film that I think is appropriately iconic, and yet I don't like it. I saw it once. I saw it once when it came out in theaters, and I never revisited it because I didn't like the movie. So I was like, I don't have a reason to revisit it. Obviously, I've seen like clips here and there because you can't like, you know, avoid that for that long and not, you know, see some bits and pieces here and there. But it's a film where I think the workplace comedy aspect of it was very good enough, as far as obviously with Streep and Tucci and Blunt and that energy and what they're bringing to it. But everything involving Andy on the other side of things, whether it's the relationship stuff, which is bad, or the just the way she kind of kept having to like learn a new lesson every 10 minutes, and it never clicked for me as far as being a, you say, a ramshackle for this movie. That's kind of how I felt about the first movie. So this one, I was
Oh,
like, well,
interesting.
this movie, I was like, well, it has nowhere to go but up in my mind, as far as if it's going to just capitalize on the stuff that people probably like the most, which is not Adrien Grenier, but everything else about the film. Good, give me that movie. And as a result, I like this quite a bit. I would go as far as to say everything that Maxwell said about the sequel, I disagree with. I think it's the exact reverse of what he said.
Right there with you.
I think it does have an interesting kind of reason to exist that doesn't feel contrived, at least not in the realm of how movies work. Like obviously just getting them back together, that's inherently contrived, but I think the movie makes a good effort to like show why these characters would be back together again. I like seeing them slip back and feel very comfortable being the characters they are, and they all feel, for me, they felt consistent to what they're supposed to be, including how they would evolve as people in this time frame. And I mean, you mentioned the cameos. Like what I liked about the cameos, for one, I don't know everybody because this is a world that I'm just not super familiar with, but I felt like nobody like stuck out as far as being like too much of one element being in this thing, including one major one that I thought was actually just entirely appropriate for a movie like this. I would say the stakes are quite low. It's still a slight film. It's not like the, especially given the topic that is going after as far as print media and journalism versus new media, there's more you can do with that. But at the same time, a summer comedy featuring these characters that's appealing to a wide audience, like I don't know how interesting that would be to the point of like wanting to make that the major takeaway for everybody to watch. So I'm like, I get not trying harder. That's not an excuse. It's more like I see. But yeah, no, I'm not gonna say best movie of the summer so far because it's only been a couple movies of the summer. I did enjoy my time with this. I had a good time watching the movie. I guess I want to like Max. So Maxwell, since you're the one that, you know, disliked the movie, like, was your anticipation there to begin with? Like, were you looking forward to like more of this?
So it's taken me a long time. I'm very old now. But I try very, very hard not to actively anticipate any movie so that I can enter it as open-minded as possible. Especially sort of like what Amber was saying a little bit, like legacy sequels are tough, man. There's like one that's good for every five that's just a unnecessary disaster. So I just tried to keep my expectations cool. So I don't think this was like a case of I thought it was going to be great and it wasn't. I just didn't vibe with it.
Oh sure, I mean okay. So I'm less about like the I guess that kind of a tip, but more of like when they just said like Devil Wears Prada 2, where you were like, oh, I'd like to see more of those characters, like or like were you
Yeah,
just like,
sure. No, I was like, yeah, okay, see, yeah, sure.
so I guess for both of you, like what like so Amber, you were clearly like vibing with the movie. Maxwell, what did you like? I guess fall off. Was it,
Okay,
did it seem
so
apparent to you like early on that like this just wasn't going to be your thing or?
yeah, I mean, I think the actually the first 20 to 30 minutes are the weakest part of the movie, and it picks up a little bit from there. All of the obligatory, like, we got to get the gang back together stuff. What I thought was interesting about what you said is you talked about Adrien Grenier. And yeah, his character sucks. And he is the worst part of the first movie. But there are three new characters in this movie that I thought were all awful, a complete waste of time. And anytime one of them was on screen, I wanted to scream.
Who are
So
these
we have
characters?
the Australian contractor, obligatory love interest, who, for my money, is the single most boring and useless character I've seen in a mainstream movie in a very long time. The next is Justin Theroux and his stupid prosthetics acting all goofy. And the third is Mr. Sir Kenneth Branagh, who I like, but was there for no reason. And anytime any of these three new characters are on screen, for me, the movie careened off the tracks to watching paint dry. The
I want
writing wasn't there, the performances were blah.
to hear from Amber as far as these go, but real quick, I just want to say
I'm sorry.
I've been watching a show of my dad, a lovely show called Colin from Accounts that stars this character, Patrick Bramble, this Australian man and his wife, Harriet Dyer. And it's a lovely little show, and we've been watching it. So like when he popped up in this movie, I'm like, oh great, he gets to be in the movie with Anne Hathaway. That's nice. I was just like, I have no issue with this guy.
I hated him so much.
What doesn't bother me about this is the both the men and the, both her and musician himbo Kenneth Branagh. What I liked is that they seem very purposely not designed to rock the boat. They seem like the answer to the first movie as far as we don't need this. It just feels like mild shading on the characters because like if there's nothing else, it's like what does Anne Hathaway do when she's not working? I like that this movie's just like, yeah, she has like a boyfriend, I guess, whatever. Like it doesn't matter. Like it's not like making it a serious plot thread as much as it's just making it a okay, so she has like something going on here, but it's not that important. But that was my take on it.
I don't
I didn't
even
find
disagree with what you're saying, but you said they're not there to rock the boat. So why are they there? They're just a waste, in my opinion.
Amber, what do you think about these horrible wastes of time that Maxwell has described here?
I was fine on the contractor, architect boyfriend or whatever he was. I was like, okay, like I wanted I was kind of here, neither here nor there, on their relationship working out. I thought it was cute that Tracy Thomas's character got involved in that and was like, here, you should talk to her. Give me your card. Thank you. Goodbye. So I was like, okay, fine. The character I really loved out of the three was actually Kenneth Branagh's character because I thought he gave Miranda the definition she needed. Because in her, like in the first one, her family life was kind of tough too because she and her husband were on the outs. And it's nice to see her actually loved and cared for by somebody who is soft and has emotional intelligence, which is something that Miranda Priestly lacks in so many ways, both in her like in her job and in her life. And to see that in the last length of time between the first movie and this one to see that growth and to see her change and to see her now in her, she's now in the world of adult parenting because her kids are now grown. They are obviously out of the house. She's still doing the same thing for the most part fundamentally, But now she has somebody that she can call on for support and little things. And I thought that that was beautiful. Like, so that was one of my favorite beats of the movie. And I thought every time he came in, it like made my heart kind of smile.
I think it does, regardless of Brenna's ability, it what you do. What, sorry, Maxwell made an announcement. I'm like, how'd this happen? But all right, well, back to
I
this.
Tried to keep it off. I'm sorry.
now it's just distracting.
Sorry,
you're fine. What I like about what Brenna does is what you're like. It gives me a reason to understand Miranda and how she is now. Where like she still has that sort of coldness to her as far as how she handles her work life, because that's just part of her character. But there's more warmth, there's more forgiving you can see in her when and how she deals with certain people, such as Andy, where someone that she could, you know, barely tolerate in the first movie until she proved herself here. Yes, she's still, you know, icy, but at the same time, you can see there's a difference in how she's handling things. That which comes into for two reasons. One is because of, yes, I think because she has someone in her life who cares about her in a way that is able to soften her up. That's good. But also, the something that's I think kind of humorous is the fact that, yeah, it's 2026 and there are different ways to approach work life that have to deal with the people that are more sensitive, or just the fact that it's inappropriate to act the same way that you would in 2006. And the film, I think, has some fun with that by having like her new assistant be one to kind of tell her you can't say these things or whatnot. I wish, if anything, I wish I played more of that, those scenes, because that's a lot of fun to kind of see Miranda have to check herself before she wrecks herself.
Well, I love the fact that Andy was like, wait, she doesn't throw her coat and her purse on your desk anymore, and she doesn't do this and she doesn't do that. I thought it was very interesting the way that time changed. And I mean, it's obviously evident out there, but it's nice to see it like very starkly in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, Justin Theroux, I'll just say this. For one thing, I didn't recognize it was him for a long time. I didn't realize he was in the movie, so I didn't realize, oh, that's the... So I kept by the like the third appearance of him, I was like, who is this man? Like I know this is like this has to be somebody. It's not like this guy's too prominent in this cast for me to be like, it's not a different actor. They didn't realize finally, like, oh, it's Theroux, I get it.
Yeah. It's exactly the sort of weird goofy shit he likes to do on the side. He's a weird dude.
I mean, I didn't have a problem. I didn't have a problem with him because it's like, well, at least he's something different. He's a different kind of energy that's being added to this movie. Is this like this tech bro who probably never had a girlfriend before, and now he's suddenly rich, so he has Emily Blunt as his girlfriend. Like, he's coming off of what, a divorce with Lucy Liu, and now he's with Emily Blunt, and it's like, all right.
Well, he's two for two with women at least.
Yeah.
good
like,
for him.
But like the idea that the movie's basically throwing like a Bill Gates type at us, who's like,
sure,
like, or like a Zuckerberg who's like socially awkward and like has to, it is, but is trying to like butt his way into this industry. Again, I'm not gonna say it's the most nuanced approach to how this thing works, but it's like, well, it's something. Like, I guess my point is, like, even Amber, you mentioned like you thought the film was somewhat of a carbon copy of the original, just kind of doing it new. I thought, if anything, it kind of moved in a different. I appreciate that it wasn't exactly the same plot that it was doing. I thought it added more. I thought it had different areas it was trying to explore, as opposed to just being like a repeat, an exact repeat of the same movie. I do think it gets past the kind of stuff that you saw the first time around pretty quickly, as far as Andy having to adjust to runway and all the different, like, even the assistant stuff is like kind of framed differently and whatnot. There's less of a competition vibe like there was in the first movie, which is like stuff I appreciated. So by the time you get to this Justin Theroux character, I'm like, all right, he's weird, but like, it's not, I'm not bothered by this. It's just like, that's a different sort of energy for the film. But Maxwell, you hated this.
I didn't hate it. I did not hate it.
I believe you described that. You said these three characters sucked the oxygen out of the room, and I wanted to hang myself.
Yeah, I hated those characters. There's actually another character I didn't mention who I also hated, and an actor who I think is just giving a very poor performance, and that's B.J. Novak.
Like, I don't disagree with you there.
The archetype fits in this world, that sort of character. I get it, but I just think he's the absolute wrong person to play it. Like, I could not take him seriously at all. And so the person who is theoretically supposed to be like the antagonist just isn't threatening at all.
I think the problem is that I never feel, for one thing, I don't think anybody can do this, but I don't think BJ Novak has no energy to be the guy that can like punch Meryl Streep in the shoulder and be like, yeah, buddy, right? Like,
Right.
there's very few people in the world I could believe do that,
Like,
let alone Ryan from The Office.
not that he would have taken this role because it's small, but someone more like Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Just with that
That would have
sort
been him.
of energy.
But I guess the energy that he was trying to give off was ineffective athleisure, bro. I
Yeah.
mean, eh.
Honestly, it just reminded me of season four, Ryan, where he's probably on a drug bender every night. He's got to go to rehab. He's going to
And
go
he's
to
always
jail.
sweaty and needs sushi. Like, that's literally wakes up and he falls asleep and he's like, guys, I'm going to sleep.
But I didn't hate, there's new characters I did like, so I'll be
Okay.
balanced.
All right.
I thought Caleb Heron was real. I'm a big fan of his comedy and his podcast. I thought he was charming.
Is he Charlie?
The second assistant.
Okay.
I love the outfits they put him in, and as a plus size person myself, seeing him in this like fashion forward movie where he gets to look fabulous and have lots of good jokes, loved it. I liked Helen J. Shen as Andy's assistant. She was in the Broadway musical Maybe Happy Ending. She's wonderful. And
I
I
saw that
thought
one.
of all of the returning cast, I thought Anne Hathaway was great. I think she does everything she can to sort of carry all the different aspects of this movie on her shoulders, and she's wonderful in this movie.
I agree with you, and that's a big reason why I like this movie. I rewatched it after I didn't mention it already. I did rewatch the first movie, and I still don't like it. But the part of it was because, yes, I think Anne Hathaway, she's not a problem in the first movie, but they give her so much stuff that I don't like, and it doesn't help her as an actress pull all that off. Where this movie,
Sure.
I do think it does a much better job with her character because she has more of a voice of her own because she's been a journalist for 20 years. She's already had the experience of working with Miranda, so I don't have to like watch, which is why I don't think this movie repeats itself too much. She does not like she has to earn her place under Miranda's eyes. She's already done that once. So here she has more of a backbone in this movie. And she has chemistry with everybody. And she looks great. Like, I mean, there's just so many like things going on here that is like allow her to be her own character that combines like her knowledge of this industry as well as what she learned from her. Like, it does all the stuff that I'd want
Yeah,
a movie like this to do as far as caring for these characters 20 years later.
and I think it's safe to say Anne Hathaway has more than proven herself as being one of the great movie stars of our time.
I'd
Her
agree, yeah.
effortless charisma, her elegance, her choice of roles, she's versatile, but she's never not great.
Yeah, she's never, even a bad movie, she's never an issue with the movie. She's not,
100%.
it's Serenity is not her fault.
Nope, no, it's not.
We haven't talked about Tucci at all.
I love him. Like, honestly, he gives Caddy best friend all the time. And sometimes I was thinking about this while we were watching the movie. I was like, sometimes you just kind of need somebody to be like, no, pick your big girl pants on up and put them on and get it going. Let's go. And like he is that character and he pushes her and I think he has always made her better specifically. And I kind of love that like that she advocated for him to have his moment too, because he deserved it.
This is how well Tucci worked for me. There's a moment, I'm not going to give it away, but there's a moment towards the end of the movie where he reveals something, and I'm like, why am I getting emotional over this movie? Like, it shouldn't happen. It's dumb that I'm like, I responded that way, and yet I'm like, God damn it, the Tucci. Like, he's bringing this thing home. Like,
Yep.
and I really like it a lot. Like, he's great here. He's so, he's if it wasn't Tucci, I'd be questioning why 20 years later he's doing the exact same thing again, because they don't do it nearly enough to justify that. But here we are, and like Tucci's able to satisfy me for that. So it's like, okay, I'll go along with this idea that this very capable man somehow never left this woman.
I mean, listen, Tucci's wonderful. He's good in this movie. His character was one of the ones I had the most issues with the way he was written. It felt inconsistent and a little muddled to me. His motivations in certain scenes. Not talking about what you just said. I thought that was a lovely moment. But throughout the movie, I felt like he was a different character depending who he was in the scene with. And I know part of that is by design because he shifts. But it was deeper than that for me. It didn't quite work.
All right. I could see a point there, because he is sort of like a I don't know, like he's like a blue fairy, right? He comes in and he's just kind of like he's the answer to everybody's problems,
Exactly. And
which
like
reduces his
we
sort
don't
of, yeah, he has less agency because of that. So it's
yeah,
like,
and there's I you know, whereas we had moments and found out about the personal lives of other characters, we don't know anything about him. And I think that was a wasted opportunity.
I'd agree there too, as far as in the, we actually do know something about him in the first movie, as far as like he has like a goal that he doesn't get to achieve, and we're sad about that. He has a partner, I believe, in the first movie as well. Like this movie does very little to kind of sketch out where he's what he's been doing for 20 years. Like the most it says, it's like, oh, Miranda's done things like that to me all the time since then. I'm like, well, that sounds horrible.
Horrible.
doesn't sound good at all. But what about Emily Blunt in this film? Amber, how do you like Emily Blunt here?
So I have kind of the same relationship with Emily Blunt in these films as Andy has with Emily. Like it's kind of like, okay, she's kind of like the lukewarm villain, but who becomes a villain but doesn't, but is but isn't. And in this one, she really kind of settles into that villain role for a good at least 20 minutes. Like it might be a little bit longer, but it felt good to see her get put in her place and shown that you really shouldn't probably burn all the bridges that light your way. Love that quote, it's so funny. But also, like, it's good to see her in the end getting some sort of resolution that still means she can stand up and do life on her own without needing anybody to define her, if that makes any sense, because she seems to be defined by what she knows and who she works for or where she is. And like, I like the fact that they flip it around. And I like Emily Blunt as an actress. Like, I think she's wonderful. So to see her be
Hot take.
absolutely that. Yeah, like she's, I adore her. Like, I just adore her so much. To see her be so cool in a movie, like it's not the normal Emily Blunt character, but it defined her acting career for a good moment. Like, so it's kind of fun to see her revisit that and go even harder. And then eat carbs, because she does do that. It's
Max,
a
how
very
about
important facet of that character.
you?
Not eating carbs.
Yeah, I mean, I share the hot take in that Emily Blunt's a wonderful actress and a great person. And I think she's really good in this movie. I think she slipped right into this role, which I think is one of her more particular and beloved roles. I also think she was saddled with some really bad writing and really bad scenes. The decisions this character makes throughout this movie make no sense to me. They felt like eight different characters rolled into one, and she's also saddled with the Justin Theroux of it all, which I mentioned earlier. So Emily does as good as she can with what I felt was some really weak material for that
See, what
character.
you call troubles, I feel, is like interesting nuance to her character, where she is essentially, like, without spoiling too much, she is like positioned as being a potential villain, or at least a foil, which is not, I mean, being a foil is basically her entire role in the first movie, but like, what I like is that she is very actively aware that she's a woman of a certain age who like doesn't have many friends, and here comes Andy back again, and it's like, I have like work-based motivations and ambitions for what I'd like to do that also eat into my past relationships with Miranda. At the same time, we do by default have to be working closely together again, and I want to embrace the idea that I can actually have a friend, someone that knows me enough to cares about me to some degree. Like, I think there's something there. Like, if it's not fleshed out in the most, you know, the most incredible way possible, that's fair, but I do think there's a consistency to who what she's after. It's messy, but that's her character. I think her character is messy.
Yeah, I also think her character was always going to be the hardest to fit back in a way that works. And I think that was probably part of the stumble there, at least for my take on it.
Fair. I mean, she's in this movie the least, and I think that makes sense because she doesn't work at Runway anymore, right? That's the whole deal. And I was curious how they were gonna kind of meld her into the fold, but I thought they did a decent job of making her make sense being here.
At times I felt like she was in her own weird Bad Ocean spin-off movie while everyone else was in a Devil Wears Prada movie.
I thought she worked more than she didn't, as far as what they're giving her. But that's, you know, that's where I'm at
Fair
with
enough.
it. We, you mentioned, you know, Charlie among others, as far as like the style of this movie, the film as a whole, the costume design here, I think it's appropriate to say it's pretty phenomenal.
Oh
Speaking
yeah, there was
of.
in many incredible outfits, in many different. Aesthetically, the whole show in Milan, the way that the runway itself was set up, the involvement of the cameo, the costumes, that scene was gorgeous in every way. I think they really nailed that. It felt lavish, it felt appropriate, it felt believable for this world.
I'm really happy to go to another Lady Gaga concert.
Oh, there it is. You dropped
I feel like the
it.
secret probably got out pretty quickly as far as
Yeah, you're probably right.
any Gaga being involved. And she's like, he has like three songs on the
Yeah, and
soundtrack.
that and the song she did with Runway is a bop. It's a really fun song. And the video is great.
I mean, I the movie's very style. I mean, if anything, I mean the director David Frankel, who did the first one along with other films like Marley and Me, what is it, The Big Year, that burger movie, The Big Year,
Oh
Collateral
yeah.
Beauty. Like, I'm not gonna say he's one of these guys. He's like a Shawn Levy, a guy that probably, like, you know, gets what he wants done under budget, very agreeable kind of director. But like,
He's
I'm
like
not.
our version of Tom Shadyac.
Yeah, he's one. Even Shadyac has a little more nuance. Sorry,
Maybe.
if I'm gonna rank these like mid-tier directors, I'd put Shadyac higher than someone like a Shawn Levy. But like, I have reasons, but we don't need to
Fair.
get into it.
Okay.
Shadyac, if you look at his Wikipedia, he has like a weird life. Like, he has a it's an interesting kind of life. But we're like Dennis Dugan does not.
No, dude.
but
Dennis Dugan
or
kind of sucks.
Steve Brill or any of these guys. Anyway.
Well, Steve Brill wrote The Mighty Duck, so he'll always have that in my book.
All right. regardless, the point that I was getting to is I'm not going to say this is the most, like, you know, a tourist-driven sequel to Devil Wears Prada, but I do think it looks pretty good. Like, as far beyond just like having good costume design, there's some choices made where they're like, there's some handheld choices, like as far as like doing some montage stuff, as far as seeing Andy like do journalisms. I'm like, all right, like
Yeah.
there's a certain effort there that I was like, well, they're not phoning it in. Like, this feels like a movie that they're it's not that it's like, guys, we got the money, we're gonna make a movie now. Like, they looks like they like planned stuff out as far as what they wanted to do. Even the score, which is, since I watched the original so recently, so it's very much fresh in my mind, is like, well, the score has like some new notes that they're adding to the theme that we already knew from the first one. It's like, there's what I'm saying is there's effort here, and there's a very, I think that as much as you might have not have liked it, actually, I do think there's a way this movie could have been very much phoned in. But when you have Meryl Streep willing to do this again, I'd like to think that people try to step up to some degree and bring, like, you know, more than they may have in a different kind of version of this movie that didn't have, you know, one of your A-plus actresses in the world working on it.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, it's a nuanced distinction, but for me, there's a difference between me saying I think this is bad and me saying a lot of things in the movie didn't work for me. I would not call this a bad movie by any means. And in fact, I probably will watch it again on TV down the line. It just, from a writing and conception standpoint, fell flat for me.
Fair
But
enough.
there's a lot to enjoy. Like, as a like work of like just fun cinema to go your friends with, there's good music, there's beautiful costumes, there's some funny jokes. Like, I totally get it. And I get why people are liking it. It is not a bad movie.
Amber, any additional kinds of praise you'd like to throw into The Divorce Product too?
Now that, like, after discussing it, I would say now you made me really think about the fact that it's not the same notes hit over and over, but it's the movie I really wanted out of the first one. And like I would immediately own it. I would watch it probably every so often as like my own like I need to do something in my house comfort movie, which is
Which
what I
means
do
I'll
with
end up
every one of.
watching it.
Oh, you'll end up watching it a lot.
Like, yeah. You know what? Probably you're going to end up liking it by the end because that's exactly what happens almost every time. Like, I had a good time both watching the movie and watching him react to it because it is my favorite thing when he hates a movie and I'm enjoying it because he just huffs and puffs next to me. He's like, and does loud things, and I'm waiting for people in the auditorium to be like, "Oh my God, who is this movie? Like, why is that happening? Like,
I am a very
why are they
expensive
mad at this
person. I'm
movie?"
sorry.
I mentioned the
I
show
oh.
that the Australian character Peter Patrick Brown was on of Calling in the Counts. I assume based on how I said it, you guys are not familiar with that show.
I have heard of it. It's been on my radar, but I haven't seen it.
I'm gonna pose this to you, Maxwell.
Okay.
given how harshly you came down on this man as being the most useless character in
But
film in the longest of time.
by the way, okay,
Yes.
I tweeted,
Yeah.
quoted, quote
You
that
X'd?
take. Yeah, I posted on X that
Website. Oh,
I said, this man is the most boring and useless man. Wait, hold on, I'm trying to find it. Shit. The most boring and useless man I've seen in a movie in a while. And so I had to mute this post because it has 20,000 likes, 3,000
God.
retweets,
Yeah.
292 comments, and 574 bookmarks.
The
So,
internet was
whatever you may say about Colin and
violent.
accounts, there are plenty of people who agree with me about this guy.
Both agree with you and don't agree with you because it is
Oh, there
hilarious.
is plenty of
Well, he
people who
got
are
ripped to
like, "Ah, oh, you
shreds.
just wanted to see Andy hook up with Miranda." I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
There were so many fun comments. I just had a great time diving down that dumpster fire of a hole. Like, I was just like, ooh,
Oh,
this
I
is
got
really
called
ripping
some
you
choice
apart.
things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was good.
I mean, for one thing, I'd pose the thought that not everyone knows Colin on accounts to begin with, so I don't think they're like
Oh,
sitting
of
there being like,
course.
"Here's my time to take down this guy that I don't like specifically because I also watch that show." What I'm saying to you, though, regardless of the 20,000 people that had something to say, is go to Paramount Plus,
Okay.
watch some of Colin on accounts. Enjoy the chemistry between him and the female character, the female lead on that show, and then come back to this movie and maybe you'll end up to it to what he's doing here, right? Because I think he's quite charming without like being someone that matters in the grand scheme of what this movie has to offer for. I mean, I do like how much of a non-entity it is, where it's like not based on his performance in terms of like its reasoning for being in the plot is just like Andy needs a place to live, and she just happens to like meet the guy that's like, you know, renting out the place. Is like, yeah, all right, done. Like, that's convenience. It's wallpaper. It's something to give Andy to do when she's not at work. It's like I get that doesn't sound like the most enticing, but it's like at the same
No,
time,
everything you're saying is why I didn't like
but
it.
at the same time, it's like she's a 40-year-old woman. I don't need to see her like going on these dates and running around. It's like, yeah, just maybe sometimes it's just easy. just have a nice guy walks up and it's like, yeah, hey,
Or she
we get
could have
along.
just been happily single because women don't need a man.
It's not about need, it's just more about the convenience of like, hey, here's a way for me to communicate what's going on in my life to somebody else outside of work. Like it's convenience
So he's a
there.
contrivance. Got it.
Yes, it is a contrivance, but but as opposed to the first movie where it's like the entire one half of the movie's devoted to how much her boyfriend sucks, this one's like, yeah, there's like a minute scene every now and again where she talks to somebody else. I mean, it seems fine
They went so far in one direction, they went too far in the other, and the seesaw collapsed in the middle.
Thankfully, we're in the year of our Lord 2026, where we don't need a woman to be saved by a man, and instead she can just have a fun relationship kind of in the background of her awesome career with all the awesome people that
That's
she
what
worked
I'm
with like
saying. Yes.
so many years ago.
It's
And
not
I
about
mean,
need. It's just like it's there. Like
and
it's
I think that made it fun for me because I was like, yeah, I relate to the wanting something simple and that doesn't mess your world up, even though they had that weird sort of breakup scene and then sort of unbreakup scene. And I was like, well, that's
because
he's
it's
just
not
like,
even a, because it's not even a breakup. It's more like, oh, they had a big fight. Like
he's just like, it was like a truck backing up, like beep, and he just backs out the door. And I'm like, okay, that was funny.
so you're saying it went too far one other direction. So I guess when the Devil Wears Prada 3 comes out and they get the Goldilocks it, they get it just right. This is the sequel where Miranda's head will be in a jar at this point. And she's still giving advice though. This
Won't
future
meet her.
this futuristic Devil Wears Prada 3 that comes out, that they'll finally have the exact right amount of what Andy needs to do, in which is of course probably of Emily Blunt and they become a couple themselves. Like that's the you know that's the.
I'd watch that movie. May I
Okay.
spoil one other cameo in the movie?
Sure.
So they're at a party in the Hamptons at Miranda's house, and my guy Carl Anthony Towns shows up, and that was the highlight of the movie for me because the Knicks are now in round two of the playoffs. Let's fucking go, Knicks.
What do I do
But
to the cat?
I got so excited. He looked good. Happy for him to be in this movie.
I just like the idea
You
that
know,
he's like, I
Anne
guess I'm going.
Hathaway's a huge Knicks fan.
I just like that he was like, he's going to Miranda's house. Like, what do they do? Like, what's this relationship like?
Who knows? They're friends, famous people.
Miranda
He's
seems like
like,
that
he's,
person who collects people.
but
Like
he,
the Slughorn of the fashion world. Like, I
but
want all
like,
these people.
what scenario is she collecting? He's like a half her age and then some. Like, he's a basketball player. Like, what does he do?
I
He's
mean,
just a real
maybe you
fashionista.
can.
He has thoughts. He writes into Runway every now and
Yeah,
then.
listen.
It's kind of the mentality in New York, I think. And like everybody is everybody wants to hang out with everybody. It's the clout and having people around. So I actually think it might be something that really
I,
does
you know,
happen.
I
I
think the
think
reason
Anna
he's.
Wintour does hang out with the Knicks. Like
Anna
she has
Wintour
to.
does do stuff like that, but I think the
Yeah.
reason he's in the movie is Anne Hathaway's a Knicks fan and.
Oh, that's entirely. I mean,
Yeah,
that's
100%.
I'm not saying no to that. That makes plenty of sense.
Maybe
But if
Miranda's a
it
Knicks fan. Who knows?
does draw off of reality, then like, she does do crazy, like the person she's based on does do crazy things like that. So it's like,
I
yeah,
have
okay.
seen Miranda Priestly sitting in between Tracy Morgan and Timothy Chalamet at a Knicks game, right there in Celebrity Row. She bleeds orange and blue. Go Knicks.
Miranda Priestly or Anna Wintour?
Miranda Priestly. That's why Carl was at the party. She's a fan.
Fair enough. Anything else about the Devil Wears Prada 2?
Liked it. Four booms out of five.
All right. Well, the way we rate things here, of course, is when people go and see this movie. So, Ambrose Sarfi, when should people go and see The Devil Wears Prada 2?
It's I feel like it's probably a date night movie, but also like go now. Just go. It's there. Go see it. Go.
All right.
AMCA list. Go.
Maxwell, which people go to see this movie?
I would say it's one you could easily and comfortably wait for streaming.
Fair enough. I think if you're a fan, I mean it's weird because I don't like the first movie, but like if you're a fan of the first movie, I think you'll be happy seeing these characters comfortably slip back into the shoes of their old roles, and I think that's good enough for a you know a jaunt to the theaters, perhaps at a matinee price, especially when we're going to be bombarded with so many things that are not lighthearted comedies like this, but instead, you know, all the very fun explosions and things we're going to get in the next few weeks. So, like, I, you know, if you want something different, I think this is fun. I had a good time with this.
The world's burning down. Have fun.
that too. All right. We've talked about The Devil Wears Prada 2. Now we're going to move on to what time? Oh, it's time, of course, for games. That is, of course, the Improv Denver Games, and I have a game. I have two games for you guys this week, actually.
Ooh.
The first game is called, that's right, A Touch of the Tooch.
Amazing.
This is a very simple game. I have four movies here, and I want you to guess how much of a percentage of the movie Stanley Tucci appears in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So all you have to give me is a percentage between 1 and 100 about how much of a percentage of the movie do you think Stanley Tucci appears in this film? The first film is The Devil Wears Prada. Maxwell, how much of a percentage of the film of The Devil Wears Prada do you think Stanley Tucci appears in?
18%.
18%. Amber, how much percentage?
37%.
What do you say?
37%.
37%. That is a high guess. The Devil Wears Prada, he is in 13.59% of that film.
Maybe he just feels more iconic in the movie.
I mean, you'd be surprised. Maxwell, you get the point for that when you're closest.
Okay.
Here's the next one. Big Night. Stanley Tucci's directorial debut, Big Night. Amber first this time. How much percentage of the film Big Night do you think Stanley Tucci appears in?
18?
18%.
Round down.
Maxwell?
60.
It's a pretty damn good guess. 64.25% of the film he's in.
In
That
my
feels
defense,
right.
I've never seen it,
Fair
so.
enough.
I didn't think you had.
No.
Here's one you might have seen. Maxwell, your first this time. Spotlight. How much of a percentage of Spotlight do you think Stanley Tucci is in?
10. 10%.
10%. Okay. Amber?
13%.
13%. Maxwell, you said 10%? You're closest. 8.85%.
Oh, God.
Nice.
Running away with this one. It's the last one for A Touch of the Tooch. Here we go. Conclave. Amber, how much percentage do you think Stanley Tucci appears in the film Conclave?
48%. Let's just go now.
What'd you say?
48,
40,
48.
4, 48% of the film Conclave. Okay, Maxwell.
First of all, let me say Tucci should have gotten an Oscar nomination for this movie. 40%.
40%. Amber, you said 48%? It's much lower. It's
Oh,
17.35%. He's not
wow.
in it. He's not in as much as you think,
No,
man.
that just goes to show the impact he makes. Wow.
Yeah. But you know what they say? A touch of the tooch goes a long way. And that's how you play a touch of the tooch. Maxwell, congratulations. You won that game.
It's an honor to be touched by the douche.
That's ho hopefully something some nobody ever says without consent was being involved.
100%. The only person who should be saying it is his wife, who I think is Emily Blunt's sister.
Yes,
Someone.
his current wife, yes. Also, he has
Yeah.
seven kids.
Wow.
That's a lot of
He
kids.
also has a gorgeous line of cookware.
He has a
Yes, he
gorgeous line
does.
of everything. I'm sure those
Yeah,
kids are all handsome.
he's an elegant motherfucker.
And full of hair.
Yeah.
Every one of his kids has more hair than the last, I'm sure.
Oh
All right. The next game is called Halfway with Hathaway. You can tell I had fun thinking of the titles of these games. And
Yes,
then
I love
I had to think of the game after the fact. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to read you half of the title of an Anne Hathaway movie, and you have to fill in the blank for the second half of the title. If you
Okay.
think you know the answer, buzz in with your name first, and then the second half of the title. Got that?
Yeah.
All right, here's the first one. The idea, blank.
Amber. Maxwell.
Amber.
Of you.
Of you is the correct answer on the board. Here's the next one. Becoming
Maxwell.
Maxwell.
Jane.
Jane is the correct answer here on the board. Love.
Maxwell.
Maxwell.
And other drugs.
And other drugs is the correct answer.
I like that movie.
Here's the next one. Locked.
Oh
Locked.
I got nothing.
Locked.
Amber?
Amber?
Down?
Down is the correct answer.
Are you kidding?
What
You're
what
correct.
movie? What movie is that? I don't know.
That is the Doug Liman directed COVID era movie with her and Chiwetel Ejiofor as a couple who are on the rocks and they're stuck in lockdown, and it
Yes.
eventually comes down to like a heist or something. Ben Stiller's in it as like a CEO of a company Anne Hathaway works for. It's really weird. It's bad. But,
I have not seen it.
okay, here's the next one. Mother.
I can't remember.
Amber.
Mary.
Mary. Here's the next one. Mothers.
Maxwell.
Maxwell.
Day?
Incorrect.
Oh.
Although now that I think about it, it's like, is she in Mother's Day? Hold on.
I don't
Let me make
know.
sure she's actually
Felt
not
like
in
it
that
could be
She's
possible.
in like she's in New Year's Day, I believe. And I or no, she's in Valentine's Day. She's not, but she's not in
Oh,
Mother's.
okay.
She's not in
Okay.
Mother's Day. Right.
Mothers.
Mothers.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Is this the
It's
one
not a
she did
typical
with
one.
Jessica Chastain?
Perhaps.
I don't know. I can't pull it right now.
Amber, what'd you say?
Is it like intuition or something, or like I remember.
Okay, the answer is instinct. Mother's instinct. You were
Oh.
tiptoeing around it. I could see you grasping at it. It was right there. You were getting
But
it.
it was the one with Jessica
It is the
Chastain.
one with Jessica Chastain,
I
yes.
could picture the poster, but I could not. Yeah, I don't
Okay. This game's too fun, so I'm gonna add a couple more. All right.
know. It feels
Dark.
like this should have been easier than the.
Amber.
Amber.
Waters.
Waters is correct with Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
Armageddon.
Maxwell.
Maxwell.
Day?
Incorrect.
I don't know. I just I'm gonna say day from everyone.
Armageddon Day.
Oh.
Valentine's Day.
Oh.
You think you don't know?
Yeah, I think I might.
You can't get a point, but you can still claim credit if Amber can't get it.
I don't think I can get it. Go ahead.
Maxwell.
Time?
Armageddon Time is the correct answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. What else can I do with this before we end this game? All the other ones are pretty obvious. Like, get.
Amber.
Yep.
Smart.
Smart. Correct. Yes.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile, my old ass was like, she's not in Get Shorty.
Yeah. All right, I think we've knocked this game out. Amber, you are the winner of Halfway with Hathaway. So congratulations.
Woo!
You were both able to win games this week. Always a good sign.
It.
Yes.
That means we don't have to go to bed angry at each other.
Correct. Exactly correct. The amount of couples on this podcast have gotten to bed angry with each other.
Listen, you are a rabble rouser, Aaron.
That's yeah, that's what it is. Classic rabble rouser over here. All right, that's enough games. Let's move on to now feedback. Feedback, feedback, feedback. This is where we go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/podcast. We asked a number of questions to the listeners. They gave us some answers. Then we have some questions from them that we can answer. Maxwell, Amber, feel free to add in any questions you might have as we go through these here. First up, what are your favorite films about fashion? Peter Paris writes, "The September issue is a fantastic documentary." Dave Maloof writes, "Phantom Thread and House of Gucci own the original Devil Wears Prada from 2006. Going to see Part Deux this weekend." Fredo Carranza writes, "Phantom Thread, Last Night in Soho, and maybe this is a stretch, but I'll add Clueless." That's a good addition. Chris Cleveland writes, "Blood and Black Lace, Slacks, Appendage, and of course, Last Night in Soho." And Philip Hurd writes, "Funny Face." Favorite films about fashion.
Definitely agree with Clueless there, because that is,
Yeah, that's
yes.
very much about fashion. I'd say so.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Antonioni's blow up.
Blow up, yeah, blow up. I'd had blow up, Funny Face, and Phantom Thread are like my go-tos on this
Phantom
one.
Thread is great. And also, I sort of mentioned it earlier in a different way, Ocean's 8, I like
Yeah.
a lot. And
Yes.
its use of the Met Gala for the heist, I think, is so clever and so elegant.
And yet another Anne Hathaway movie.
Oh
Uh-huh.
yeah, and
Yeah.
she's
She's
great. She
that's one of her
is.
best performances, I would
That's one
argue. So
because,
really.
like, I think she does such a great job of poking fun at like the internet persona that existed of her. It's really good, yeah.
100%.
Breakfast at Tiffany's also comes to mind. Mahogany, older film. And A Personal Shopper with Kristen Stewart, I think, is also
Oh,
in
that's a good one.
that. Next question we have here. What's your favorite Anne Hathaway performance? Mark Hoffmeyer writes, let me get back to that. I'll say first. Dave Maloof writes Colossal, which is a film that is a fascinating look at addiction and relationships, which can be very toxic. It's not what I was expecting. She is great in it, and I know there's some people out there who dislike her performance as Selina Kyle and Catwoman in The Dark Knight Rises, but I enjoyed her performance there as well. Mark Hoffmeyer writes, I agree with Colossal. She rules. Chris Cranlan has absolutely loved her in Colossal. She is amazing. And in Les Mis. And Philip Hurd writes The Dark Knight Rises. A lot of same thinking going on as far as Colossal and The Dark Knight Rises. But what's your favorite performance made out of the way?
I would go ahead and say two very, very different movies. The Princess Diaries, because it is a classic and I love that movie and it's so precious. And Mother Mary. I love Mother Mary. Like, I could watch it again and again.
I would add Rachel getting married. I think she's fantastic in that. And I also do agree that I think it's comfortable to say Mother Mary is some of her most electric work ever, especially her physicality. Amazing.
See, obviously Serenity.
Yeah.
No, Rachel Getting Married, I think, is a fantastic performance. I
Yeah.
really like her a lot in that for sure. I'm not going to say favorite, but I do agree with the notion that I think Selina Kyle is very good work from her in that film.
Yeah.
I think she's a very good Catwoman. There's that whole sequence where she like is she's Catwoman for 1 second, then the police like barge into the room and she starts like screaming and acting like she's helpless, like, and then she goes right back to being Catwoman again. It's like that's just good stuff. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I always really liked her as Catwoman. I
Yeah,
thought she
that
did a
was a
nice
very
job.
good choice. Rachel Getting Married and that other one, the Colossal. I do really like Colossal. I think it's a very good performance. All right, next question. What are your favorite workplace comedy films? Dave Maloof writes Broadcast News, which turned out to be very prescient, didn't it? Office Space, obviously, and I really like Up in the Air, circa 2009, a dark comedy about obsolescence. Fredo Carranza writes Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, Clerks, and Office Space. Chris Cleland has High Fidelity or Sorry to Bother You. Also need to throw in an old B and black and white classic, The Apartment. And Philip Hurd has The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. That is a fun way to it's a fun way to phrase that movie. It's a workplace comedy.
I would say definitely I can always agree on Office Space. Like, that movie is just so funny, and defines so much of how I see working in corporate America. Like, yes, I want to beat the shit out of that printer. But also, like, oh my gosh. I enjoy The Devil Wears Prada. I enjoy, like, I might still go because, like, I'm like losing my train of thought because there's a tiny ruffian running right off floor.
Maxwell, your thoughts?
Okay, so I agree with a lot of the answers from other people. I'm gonna add three. First of all, Chaplin's Modern Times, I
Yeah.
think, is a great workplace comedy. The Shop Around the Corner with Jimmy
Yeah,
Stewart,
great movie.
which is also a romantic comedy, but it is a workplace comedy. And this one also stars Anne Hathaway, and I think it's just absolutely delightful. The Intern with her and Robert De Niro. Super charming movie, really funny stuff about age gaps in the workplace. Andrew Rannells in there cracking jokes. It's good stuff.
I have one that I forgot about. 9 to 5, which I've only seen once and I know I loved it, but then I also just saw the musical. So I was like, oh, this is great. So it cues me back to, like, oh yeah, I really liked that movie. And then I definitely agree on Anchorman. Always Anchorman.
As far as ones that were mentioned, the one that I'm going with is a Working Girl,
Oh
which
yeah.
is just a
Oh.
fantastic movie. Can't think of anything else that sticks out, but no, Modern Times is a good call as well, as far as that goes. A lot of good guns already picked. All right. Next question. What are some great films featuring horrible bosses? Well, Christine writes 9 to 5. Mark has horrible bosses. Okay, Mark, thanks for choosing the obvious answer there. Bloof has Swimming with Sharks immediately comes to mind, and apologies for the Kevin Spacey reference, plus Glengarry Glen Ross, the Devil's Advocate, a hellish boss. Fredo Carranza
Yeah.
writes The Incredibles and Philadelphia. Jeez, yeah, I guess not the best boss, no. Chris Cleveland has RoboCop, Dick Jones was a knob, and I suppose Star Wars movies and Darth Vader was also a total knob. I mean, Grand Moff Tarkin was a total knob. He blew up a planet. I mean, Philip Hurd, Ralph Fiennes was a horrible boss in Schindler's List, and the Harry
Jesus
sorry,
Christ.
let me just comprehend that sentence as I read through and the Harry Potter films.
That's true. He does kill half of his minions.
Horrible boss movies.
The Social Network.
Who's the boss in
Yeah.
that scenario? Because I've never thought.
Zuckerberg.
Okay. No mention of Office Space. Like, we just talked about Office Space. I mean, Office Space is horrible.
True. Yeah, Office Space.
Lumberg.
Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation was Brian
Yeah.
Doyle Murray.
Yep.
Any version of, but in particular, the Muppet Christmas Carol. Scrooge
It's
is
just the
not a
same
good
subject.
boss.
Scrooge being a Scrooge boss.
No. Yeah, I guess like Clerks, because he's not even supposed to be here today.
Wait.
Oh, I just thought of one.
Yeah.
Death to Stalin.
Okay. I don't know. Gordon Gekko is not a great guy, right? He's
Yeah, it's kind of a jerk.
I just had one. I forget now. I lost it. I lost it. It's gone. All right. Who do you consider to be our most stylish actor, both now and from the past? Brandon Peters writes Ian McDiarmid back in 1983, but especially in 2019.
Oi.
Mark Hoban has Marlene Dietrich. Chris Cleveland has to be Audrey Hepburn and Sidney Poitier from the past. As for modern, Mr. Clooney, Idris Elba, and Zoe Kravitz for a generally looking fly as hell on and off the red carpet. Dave Bellew writes Audrey Hepburn for intelligence, grace, style, fashion, elegance, creativity, beauty, and personified. Philip Hurd has Toshirô Mifune, Henry Cavill, Grace Kelly, and Cary Grant. Not a bad set of people.
Yeah, Grace Kelly was immediately going to be my answer for the past.
Audrey Hepburn was my
And
answer for the past.
Hepburn
For
certainly comes to
present,
mind for me.
yeah, absolutely. For present, I was going to say Zendaya.
Yes, I agree with that, actually. I was thinking Zendaya because she always turned out.
I'd argue the same for Lupita Nyong'o. I remember when she was,
Yeah.
whenever she's doing red
Oh.
carpet stuff, she's always just, they know how to dress her. So.
She's so striking that it no matter what they dress her in, she looks amazing.
All right. What are some great films focused on journalism? Mark Hoban has Network, Broadcast News, and Shattered Glass. Dave Bellew writes The Paper, All the President's Men, and The Post. Chris Cleland has The Killing Fields or Nightcrawler. Fredo Carranza has Zodiac, The Insider, The French Dispatch, and Spotlight. There's a variety of films right there. That's a
Yeah.
marathon. And Philip Hurd writes The Philadelphia Story and Minamata. Minamata, yeah.
Wow. Those are some great movies.
His Girl Friday comes to mind.
Great movie. Capote.
Capote? Amber, any others?
I agree with The Post. That was probably one of my favorite journalism movies.
I do like The Post.
That was
Did
fabulous.
anyone say Good Night and Good Luck?
No. Good movie.
There you
Oh,
go.
wow. Thank you.
Trying to think of any others. Now we're good. Got a lot in there. A lot of good ones. All right. That was our last question. Now we got a couple questions from the listeners. Okay. Dave Maloof asks, guys, we're going to see The Devil Wears Prada at a drive-in. Exclamation point. When's the last time y'all went to a drive-in, and what are your overall feelings about drive-in movie theaters? Thanks. The last drive-in I went to was for Godzilla v. Kong, based on the fact that it was the pandemic time, and that's where they mocked up a kind of semi-premiere for the movie by way of drive-in, which was fun. I didn't grow up with drive-in, so my drive-in experience is fairly limited. I've done a few in the past 10 years, based largely on the novelty of just doing a drive-in, because this is not an option that comes up very often. I did it a couple times during the pandemic with Anna, and before that I had done no well yeah no before that I did some in Vegas, and I'm sure drive-in technology has somewhat evolved over the years, but it worked fine for me. The best example I have is Tenet, where I saw Tenet at a drive-in, and it was locked down, so that was like the way to see Tenet. And for all the rabble rousing about how hard it is to hear Christopher Nolan movies, we watched Tenet in the car, and I'm like, I heard it fine. I had no issues with the sound whatsoever. It sounded great. So I mean, I can't speak to anyone else's experience when it comes to drive-ins, but I'm not saying it's necessarily my preferred way to see a movie, but I haven't not enjoyed the experience for mainly for the novelty factor of it. But Maxwell, Amber, how about you guys? Have you enjoyed drive-ins?
Yeah, my last experience was also during COVID. In summer of 2020, they opened a drive-in on the waterfront in Brooklyn. And it was like a beautiful backdrop. You could see Manhattan behind you. I saw Saving Private Ryan on Memorial Day weekend and or maybe July 4th weekend and Back to the Future. And it was awesome. Like, especially Back to the Future, like I felt like a double layer of nostalgia.
I could see that, yeah.
Seeing it in a drive-in. There's one not too far from us that maybe we'll go to this summer because I think there is something fun about it. The
Yeah.
sound is never as good as you would hope it would be, but it's still a cool experience.
My last drive-in movie experience was actually in Florida, also during the pandemic. I lived about 40 minutes away from all the theme parks and any major theaters, but we had a Cineplex near us that actually did a drive-in, like a COVID drive-in on the side of their building. So you could park and they brought you popcorn and they brought you snacks and food. And I was like, this is brilliant. Like, why are more theaters not doing this? And I don't
Were
even
they on
really.
roller skates bringing you the popcorn?
No, they were not
Oh,
on roller skates. It was,
there goes the dream.
it, yeah. And I know, right? It would have been so cool. But it was a really good way because it was a smaller chain in Florida, that one of my best friends was actually a general manager at that exact theater like years before. So I kind of stuck with them and I was like, okay, cool, we can go see a movie. And I think we went to see what was the Disney movie that came out that year with
Raya the Last
Tom
Dragon.
Holland and
Oh,
no,
Onward, Onward.
Onward. That's what we saw.
Pixar, yeah.
Yeah, or sorry, yeah, Pixar. And it was a really fun experience. And before that, I think the last one I had went to was when I was a kid in Louisiana. So I think that we I think it's a really cool thing to do. And I think, I kind of miss social distancing because I don't like people that much. So
But you love
a drive-in
gatherings.
is and I've worked in, as of this moment, eight different movie theaters, and God, what I would not give to run a drive-in. Like, that would be such a fun idea. Like, I think it's such a cool idea.
Right. Got one more question here. This one's from Fredo Carranza. Hey, Aaron and Abe, and guests. I like that. I like that they included guests. In recent years, legacy sequels seem to have generally delivered on a good to great basis. What movie or film series from decades past do you have genuine interest in seeing get the legacy sequel treatment? And what are some of your favorite legacy sequels? Far as favorite legacy, I mean, Creed immediately comes to mind. I mean, Blade Runner 2049 delivered. Top Gun Maverick seemed to satisfy a few people. I just
I agree
watched.
with Top Gun Maverick too.
Was it what?
I agree with Top Gun Maverick.
Yep.
That's a fun movie.
I just watched The Matrix Resurrections again, and
Ah,
that movie rules. Like, it's
that's
so.
what I was gonna say. It is
It's
so good, so misunderstood, so fucking clever. It's
such a clever way to
great.
do it. Yeah, I really.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those ones in like a few more years, people are gonna be like, oh, why didn't we love this? or see this the first time around?
Yeah, all right,
I agree with them.
that's a few. You know what? I'll just throw this out there. I like that Bill and Ted Face the Music was better than I had any expectations
Me
for.
too. I liked it a lot.
I like Bill and Ted fine. I wasn't like sitting around being like, "When are they gonna make that third one?" Because like, who needs a, what are we talking about? And then it came out, and I'm like, you know what? This is entirely enjoyable. This is like does the job. What do we want to see? What's a legacy sequel you want to see?
District 9.
I mean, at this point, it would be a legacy sequel.
Yeah, it
Obviously,
wouldn't just be a sequel anymore. That movie was 2009.
Oh my gosh. I have no answer to this question because I have no idea at this exact moment what legacy sequel I'd want to see. Swell probably would know what my answer would be more than I would know because I usually ramble at him about like I want to see a sequel of this and then I forget about it.
What are some of your favorite movies? We could make a sequel right here. What do we got?
I think your answer would be the long rumored Kill Bill Volume 3
Yes,
where
thank
Renita's
you.
daughter goes after Al.
Oh my God, yeah,
I
that
think
is the
that would be
dream
your
because
top answer.
Kill Bill is my favorite movie ever. And if you're gonna give me the possibility, and I know he had it, so I just want to see it. I
Okay.
would,
There's
I
one
like.
other one. Oh, sorry.
Oh no, go ahead, go ahead.
There's one other one that I would like to see, even though not all of the cast members are still with us, and that's Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, like for a long time, I was like, "Ah, it looks like they're actually gonna pull it off." And then, yeah, Alan Rickman unfortunately passed away. And it's like, well, that kind of it's like that's such a specific person to have passed, where it's like, I don't know what you do with that if Alan Rickman's not
Yeah,
there.
you couldn't recast for
You
sure.
don't recast, and it's not. I mean, the nature of the show means like, well, there's nobody else. You just have to have an entirely new character. But that like it breaks up the dynamic that's really fun of having him against Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver. So it's like, yeah,
Yeah, I don't know if it would work anymore, but.
I this isn't my answer, but it's leading to my answer. I just saw RoboCop last night at the Egyptian Theater as part of TCM Fest, and Peter Weller was there along with Kurtwood Smith and Paul McCrane, who is one of the other bad guys in the movie. But Peter Weller made me think. If I could get a legacy sequel, the further adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension,
Ooh.
with and like everyone's basically Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Jeff Goldblum, Ellen Barkin, Christopher Lloyd, like everybody's still alive. Like we can do this, and I'd love to see a new Buckaroo Banzai adventure. I don't know what that would be exactly. I don't know what you would do, but you know what? I really love Buckaroo Banzai. I'd love to see more of that.
I would welcome the return of Jack Slater in Last Action Hero 2.
Oh my gosh. We did just watch the first one, and that
If they ditch the kid, I'd be super happy with that.
would
Yeah,
kind of be
great.
fun. I don't know if that kid's still alive.
Austin O'Brien, he's why would you not? Why would you go to? Why would you make sure I'm going to maybe not acting anymore? Why would you go to death as a possibility?
I don't know. Is he alive? I'm so sorry.
Yes,
Where has mine ghost?
he's 44 years old. He's married.
Good for
Living
him.
good life well.
My apologies,
He's retired from acting. He
Austin
owns a
O'Brien.
photog he owns a photography company.
I wonder if he'd come back for Last Action Hero 2.
I mean, he was bad when he was in his prime. I don't think he'd be getting good now that he's retired for years.
I like him in
I think
that movie.
he's the movie that he's the reason I don't like that movie.
Oh,
Everything else about
wow.
the movie,
Funny.
he is so annoying that I can't stand him. I've tried. Every so often I'll watch Last Action Hero. Maybe I'll like it more this time, but that kid just bothered me so much. Arnold's fucking in the pocket. He's doing the best. He's great.
Yeah, he's so good.
All right. Very good question for both of you, David and Fredo. Thank you for that. But yeah, that's enough feedback. Feedback. And that's going to bring
Feedback,
us to the end of
feedback.
this week's episode of Not Now, Fair Today. You can find everything I do on my personal Substack page, thecodazeek.substack.com. I write for League of Entertainment for movie reviews there. I also co-host the podcast Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla, an award-winning podcast where my friend Terrence Johnson and I talk about the Godzilla films in chronological order and about all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Maxwell Hanna, where can people find more of you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Cinemaxwell, Instagram at Cinemaxwell Inc., and you can find some of my writing at swelldwells.blog.
Amber Coates, where can people find more of you online?
I'm all over the internet at Takara Kanashi. It's TakaraKanashi. Lots of A's in that. I'm also one half of the amazing Ember Productions team. You can find us on basically all socials at Ember, EMBER, Products, PRODUX. We have a lot of fun stuff coming up. We're producing a benefit literally tomorrow night for breast cancer awareness. Yay, go team.
Very cool.
And research and funding. So it's really cool. We do a lot of really cool theater things in New York. And I think we're gonna try to get back into the podcasting world. Who knows when that's going to happen or what's going to happen with it, but we're gonna do it together.
Very good. You can find all the other episodes about Now Theater Today on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. Feel free to email us at notpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on all the social stuff, Facebook and what is it? Facebook and Blue Sky at Out Now Podcast, and Twitter and Instagram at Out Now underscore podcast. Max Lambert, thank you both very much for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, thank you. It's been as fun as always. Look forward to have you both back on soon enough as well. Thanks to the listeners for listening. Next week we'll be talking Mortal Kombat 2. So stay tuned for that. And yeah, that's gonna do it for this week's episode. So
Fatality.
friendship. That's gonna do it for this week's episode. So until next time, so long and goodbye.
I'm feeling fab, I'm feeling free, I feel exceptionally me. Hate all you want, but I'm dangerous. You're gonna burn your tongue on this tea. Might show up late, might be on time. Just wait, I'm coming. This paparazzi routine, bitch, I came to be seen. Yes. Serve a little sass, yes. With a little side of ass. Yes. Got the front row screaming, okay.